Hi, welcome to the second season of Two Friends with Nothing in Common. My name is Manuela, and I'm going to tell a quick story about what Andrew and I don't have in common. So, something that I realized since working, we both work at 8 a.m., and I know that I just like to get as much sleep as I can, and sometimes I'll sleep till like 7, but I was just informed that Andrew doesn't sleep past 6:15 on a weekday. Blows my mind.
I live 5 minutes away from work, and I have at least an hour and 45 minutes to get ready.
Oh my gosh. I live 30 minutes away from work, and sometimes I have like 20 minutes to get ready, because I would rather sleep and be late.
No.
I don't have the music.
Weekly recap. I'll start us off as always. Two Saturdays ago, I road tripped to Clinton, Missouri for the second time in my life.
We're doing a 2 week recap.
My weeks are a lot more uneventful than yours. Your weeks, you always have like these extravagant things going on, and I'm like,
not true.
I cleaned my bathroom. I need more than a week.
Yikes.
So, anyways, went to Clinton, Missouri for the second time, and This is the second time this has happened, but this has happened both times I went to Clinton, but me and my friend went into a restaurant, and the staff just assume you know how things work because it's a small town. No one tells you if you're supposed to be seated or not, or, like, asks you a question or greets you or anything, and so we were like, well, I guess we sit down. So we picked a spot, and we're sitting there, and then after, like, 10 minutes, a waitress does come over, and we, like, order and everything. We're like, okay, so we made the right choice here. It just took a long time because they're busy, I guess. But then when it was time to pay, it was unclear whether or not we had to go to a register somewhere or
Dine and Dash.
We did not Dine and Dash.
You just ruined the whole week.
Yes, that's how it could have been eventful.
How you have fun weeks. You do crazy things.
Oh, man. No, actually, we did Dine and Dash, and then the waitress ran out of the building dramatically.
Oh, my gosh. And she called the cops, and they pinned you to the ground. I saw it on the news.
Then Sam rolled down the window and then gave them the bird, and then we zoomed onto the highway, and then the police were following us, flashing their lights.
Uh-huh. And you guys were both going separate directions.
Yes.
Or did you ride together?
we both got in my car.
Okay. Same time. Yep. Uh-huh.
Yes. No. And then we got stuck behind two like tiny cars that were going super slow.
Smart cars?
One was a smart car. One was a Buick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Driven by an old lady. Mm-hmm. So then we were stuck behind them. So then we like veered off and we're in the grass. But then like we hit a hole in the ground or a gopher.
Those just come out of nowhere.
Yeah. And so then the car got kind of messed up, and then we had to, like, run on foot.
Uh-huh. And you are such a great runner.
I am a good runner,
actually.
You're so
athletic.
I'm not athletic, but I can run decently. But then we got tased, and mm-hmm. I spent 2 days in jail.
I knew it. You're different.
I am a different one. In reality, I assumed that we gave her the check, or we, like, put our cards on the table and she would take them. Nothing was happening. I got up and went to the restroom and looked for the register, and I found it. And it was turned so that the screen was facing outward, like, facing the customer. So you would think that that would mean that, like, the waitress takes the stuff from your table and, like, goes back into that tiny corner area, and it's just easy for her to access. So we went back and told him, like, when I had sat down, like, I think we wait for her to come. We waited some more. And then eventually some, like, random lady came by, like, filling up people's coffee. And we asked her, she's like, oh, yeah, you go in the back. So there's that. If you ever go to Square 109 in Clinton, you have to go and pay at the register in the back.
Where is that?
It's on the square in Clinton.
Oh.
It's like
I've only ever been to Applebee's and Taco Bell in Clinton.
Okay.
And Walmart.
Yeah, they like don't even have a Denny's, so.
Well, that's not a defining establishment of a city. Andrew's offended.
I am offended.
Not the first time.
Ouch. No, so, yeah, then after that we did drive around because that's what me and my friends do. We go on drives, so that was fun. The police were not in pursuit of us.
They probably were, you just didn't know it.
Maybe so, incognito. Mm-hmm. Then,
keeping an eye out.
A few days later...
New boys in town.
New boys in town. A few days later, I went to my apartment's leasing office and I signed some documents confirming that... You didn't even let me finish.
I'm sorry, go on.
That I am, in fact, moving out of my current apartment.
What?!
And I've been in the same complex for 3 years, and it's right off campus, it's dumpy.
It's 5 minutes from work.
That's the part I'm going to miss the most, the location to, like being central in town and proximity to work. But no, they aren't the most reliable individuals. They sued me and my roommate at one point, because they said
no
that...
No way, I never knew that.
Yeah, my first year in Springfield, they sued us, because they said we did not pay our rent, when in fact, we had accidentally overpaid that month.
Those buttheads?
Yes. Wooten. Good old Wooten.
Wow, rip. Drag them.
Yeah, you know. Then our friend Brad was in town this past weekend. He got a job in Columbia, so he came down, visited, got to hang out with him. It was also super windy. We walked from... What?
I love your weekly update. I just do. Super windy. Yeah, that doesn't happen every day.
It was super windy, and it was nice despite the wind, so we went on a walk from Bread Co. to Ramatai, and wow. We did not fall
walking
over.
Those miles.
Yeah, but then we had to walk back to get to our cars.
Bread Co. and Ramatai are like a quarter mile away
yeah.
from each other, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah, look it up. Google it.
Ramatai's amazing. If you ever come to Springfield, go there. Don't go to Bread Co. No offense. Panera, sorry.
Bread Co., that'll probably come up during our guest's topic today. By the way, our guest was at Bread Co. and Ramatai with us. But, anyways, on our way back to Bread Co., the intersection of Elm and National, you know how, like, a stoplight is supposed to be perpendicular to the road that you're driving on so you can mm-hmm. see what color the lights are? Mm-hmm. It had completely, like, swung over to the side.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. And the lights were out. Like, they weren't even flashing red.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
And the cars were just, like, plowing through on National. Yeah. So, like, when I got in my car and I was, like, trying to cross National, like, I was, like, I stuck my nose out so that, like, the oncoming cars were, like, oh, this person's actually
trying.
Your car
got smashed.
Yeah, and then I was in the hospital for 3 days.
Oh my gosh, Andrew.
Yeah, and then the doctor's, like, I think I'm going to have to amputate both of your arms.
I knew you looked different.
It's been an eventful week. End of this, daylight savings.
Classic. Are you going to complain about it like everybody
no,
else?
No, I was going to... I actually have an exclamation point
good.
In my notes after daylight savings.
Uh-huh, confirmed.
Because... because I'm excited about
it. You have to
about...
exclaim it, then.
Exclaim it. Daylight savings.
Daylight savings!
Yeah. I'm happy that it's light out longer.
Mm-hmm. It's not light out right now. You just looked outside.
Yeah.
There's a light the on, but...
Yes, the sun has set since mm-hmm. we started. But no, that was my...
But yeah. I would agree. Daylight savings is pretty amazing. Being light out till like 7. It's real nice. Honestly, my week was super boring. I actually did finish my taxes, so that was
okay.
really fun. Mm-hmm. My first time doing my taxes on my own.
Nice.
So now I'm just waiting for my tax return. And then I went to Kansas City on Saturday, and I went to Union Station. And it was, like, really nice, too. It was, like, 55. We went and saw this thing called Dinosaur Revealed. Which, like, it was fun, but it wasn't, like, worth the money that I paid for it.
Okay.
And then I was really excited for this planetarium movie, because it was called Dinosaurs at Dusk, and I was like, expecting this really cool, like, informational movie about dinosaurs, because I love dinosaurs.
Wait, was this, like, somehow related to the Magic Treehouse? Or what was that book series called?
It wasn't Magic Treehouse. Okay. But it was, like, this weird, like, CGI animated movie about this girl who's learning to fly, and she gets in, like, this plane crash, and she, like, wakes up in, like, the Cretaceous period, and she's like, whoa, look at all these dinosaurs! And her dad, like, pops out of nowhere, and it's like, let's go look at all of them, and, like, it's so weird. And they only looked at winged dinosaurs, because, like, the whole premise was, like, flying, like, learning how to fly an airplane. So they only looked at flying dinosaurs. And I was like, those are the lamest ones!
You don't like pterodactyls?
Well, I mean, they're just, like, big, and they fly, like, they can't, like, rip you apart in one bite.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I just find things more fascinating that can kill me.
Yeah, yeah.
A pterodactyl would definitely kill me, like, but not as dramatically as a T-Rex. But yeah, so it was just really weird, and I kept looking at my friend, and I was like, I was not expecting this. And, like, I even paid extra to see it, and it did not live up to the hype, and it was, like, a whole bunch of, like, little children with me, too, like, in the theater. And I kept, like, thinking that it would get better, and it never did. So I was just really disappointed, and it was only an hour, but it felt like it was 3 hours long. And very unbelievable, because this girl, like, crashed her plane, and the plane was, like, mangled, but somehow the plane, like, launched her out of it, and she, like, landed perfectly on the ground, like, 20 feet away from the plane, and it just looked like she was sleeping. And I was like, if the plane was that mangled, you'd probably be dead.
Or on fire.
Yeah, the plane wasn't on fire either. See? Yeah. It was fake. But yeah, that was about it.
Nice.
Yeah. I tried burnt ends. Well, that was the name of the restaurant, but also the name of the meat that I got. So good. I've never had burnt ends before. And then I got this sweet and spicy coleslaw, and it was way more spicy than sweet. Like, I couldn't even eat it. I just, like, took it off of my plate and put it on the table. Wow. Because I was, like, my mouth was on fire. And so that was really disappointing. But the burnt ends were so good. And then I went to IKEA. So that was actually really fun. I haven't been there in a while. Got an ice cream cone. Looked at my future house decor ideas. and then watched a really suspenseful movie that I'll tell you about later. Nice. But yeah, that was my week.
Cool.
Nothing else.
Nice.
Yep.
So that takes us into our next segment.
Correct.
So our guest today is Simon Nogan, who...
What up?
I went to school with him for a semester, and then we...
Technically, we both went to school with him, because we were in the same university, but not the same college.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, we had a class together.
I know, I'm joking.
But anyways, jeez. He's a city planner, works for the city of Springfield, and he is an expert on cities and a lot of other stuff. And I'll stop talking, so
seems
you talk.
Seems fitting.
So I can just talk about my favorite thing, the thing I'm most passionate about.
Yes. Now you're making me kind of nervous, because I thought we agreed on something. But go on.
All right. I'm going to tell you all a story.
Ooh.
And this is a story. Now, no, don't worry.
Manuel is grimacing.
Is the fear that evident?
I'm going to tell you all a story. A story that pertains to every Missourian alive today.
Oh, also, while doing my taxes, I realized that I've been a Missouri resident for 3 years. Okay, go on.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Anyway, sorry. I'm a resident, so this pertains to me.
It's 1876.
Mormons.
Exactly.
No!
Oh,
dang it.
The city of St. Louis is the fourth largest city in the United States.
Okay.
At least it was in 1870, according to the 1870 census.
That's right. I forgot.
Now, Chicago was right on St. Louis's heels. Right there. And we should, this is an important time to point out that, let's keep in mind, Missouri in the 1870s, it was St. Louis and then plains, nothingness, barely even farmed, pretty much just like wild abandon, right? The good old days. You got a blip called Springfield, you have a blip called Kansas City, a little bit bigger than a blip, but St. Louis was the rolling economy for the entire state and a large economic player for the entire United States. Again, it was the fourth largest city. Chicago was right on their heels. And lo and behold, St. Louis, very aware of the fact that, you know, Chicago is growing in prominence. Chicago had, St. Louis was a river town. That's what they based their economy off of, the riverboats, which made a ton of sense. We had the biggest river going through right past it. Made a ton of sense to put all that commerce there. Real cheap way to send things up and down across the United States.
So are there really sharks in the Mississippi?
There are no sharks in the Mississippi. Just checking.
Asking for a friend.
The city, knowing that, well, so Chicago, you know, they couldn't really do as much river traffic as St. Louis could, but they realized that there's this new technology called the railroad. Hmm. Now, St. Louis had some big, big shipping conglomerates, monopolies in a sense, and they pretty much ran politics in St. Louis. So when the railroad people came to town and said, hey, we want to build a fancy new railroad that's going to come from New York City in the east and come right through here, through St. Louis, and go all the way west to San Francisco. Keep in mind, the gold rush was happening, so San Francisco was the big booming place out west. It was about the 10th largest city in 1870.
I thought that happened in, like, Idaho. Okay, never mind. I'll stop asking.
Pretty sure. I don't know anything about the gold rush other than I thought it was all California.
Okay, you're probably right. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Some potatoes.
the potato rush.
The best kind of gold.
Spud rush.
Golden potatoes. Yum. Anyway. Yeah. Gold rush.
Yeah, the gold rush. St. Louis is like, man, this sounds like a really good idea. Shouldn't we have this? And then the people with all the money said, no. We don't want no railroads. We want to keep all that barge traffic running. Don't put no railroads here. Everything through St. Louis or not St. Louis travels on ship. So, Chicago, hearing that this big city just south of them just said no to the railroads, was like, well, that's an interesting decision to make. I wonder if they'll come and say hi to us. Chicago was like a worthless little town, pretty much. There were a couple blocks, and it wasn't really doing much of anything. Then the railroads got wind that, hey, there's this place with cheap land, and we could easily send the railroads up here through this northern portion and send them west. That's what came to Chicago's big fame, was having all the railroad contracts. They built the railroads, Chicago grew like crazy. St. Louis, with all their interest in shipping and barging and things like that, didn't really catch on to trains until way later. It wasn't until, I think it was 1890, so we're talking about 2-3 decades really after railroads mattered, in a sense, that St. Louis was like, we should start construction on a big, like, railroad shed. It's what we call Union Station today in St. Louis. That didn't open until, I think, right around 1900. I think it might have been right before 1900.
Better,
too late.
Better late than ever.
Is it though?
Just trying to stand up for St. Louis.
So, that paints the picture of 1870 in the United States. Chicago's coming right up on the heels of St. Louis, what was a really big booming place, and still was. You know, it was 1876. Nothing too crazy's going on.
Wait, wasn't that the World Fair?
World's Fair
Maybe
was 1904.
I don't know. I need to stop talking.
I'll go on a tangent and point out that 1904 really cemented St. Louis and Chicago's hate for each other. Now, they had a lot of reasons to hate each other. First, Chicago stealing the railroad contracts. You could say stealing. St. Louis didn't really want them, right? Like I just explained. But, I mean, there was that sort of, well, shouldn't they go through the bigger city? And then Chicago was like, shut up. You didn't ask for it. Mm-hmm. You didn't, you know.
That's kind of our own fault.
A little bit, but whatever. So that was our first gripe with Chicago, that St. Louis' second gripe with Chicago was when Chicago decided to send all of their fecal and other nasty matter down the Mississippi, which of course passes St. Louis.
Oh my
Louis.
Gosh!
Yeah, so
for
that
real?
Was strike two for St. Louis. They were like,
oh my gosh.
Y'all are just polluting us with all your nastiness. This is disgusting, Chicago. You guys are filthy.
That's petty.
Yeah, it's pretty petty. So, we're jumping forward a little bit, but this is a tangent. Tangents are allowed. So, right? I don't know. What are the rules?
Yes.
Okay.
Just keep going.
So, Chicago, St. Louis, in a spree in the 1900s, realizing that Chicago had outpaced them, and pretty much everyone else was starting to beat them real good, too. St. Louis had this great idea. Let's host the World's Fair. Let's just do it. Well, Chicago was picked to be the host in 1904 of the Olympics.
Oh.
So same year, right? St. Louis gets awarded the World's Fair. Chicago gets awarded the Olympics. Let's keep in mind, this would have been the first Olympics in the United States ever. Oh. Now, St. Louis, they did a little politicking, you could say. They got the right people on the phone, and they got the right people mad, and they put the right money behind it, and they called whoever they needed to call. Probably someone in Greece, right? Because that's where they did the Olympic stuff or whatever. Called somebody and told them, listen, International Olympic Committee, you will not be doing the Olympics in Chicago while we are simultaneously doing the World's Fair. You will either relocate the Olympics to St. Louis or no one will attend the Olympics in Chicago. And whoever these people were, I guess, that influenced by that conversation.
Oh my gosh.
They literally pulled the Olympics from Chicago and were like, all right, I mean, the bigger city told us we had to. So, boom.
That is amazing.
1904, St. Louis gets their first bit of revenge on Chicago.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
They steal the Olympics. And so the first U.S. Olympics ever were actually St. Louis, 1904. No. Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I've never known that.
Totally other story. It actually was the worst Olympics that ever happened. And it actually almost killed the whole Olympic initiative.
I believe it.
Yes, it was so bad, mostly because rail access was so horrible.
Oh.
No kidding. Literally, world athletes were almost unable to get to St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
Not kidding. Yeah, it was a complete disaster. But wait, that's another day, another time. Anyway,
oh
this is
gosh.
A tangent.
I'm learning so much.
St. Louis and Chicago, big tiffs. Over railroad, over poop in the water, over stealing the Olympics, you know, big petty things, right? Anyway, that's 1900s, right? St. Louis is trying to reclaim some fame. We saw how well that worked, right? Anyway, let's go back to 1876.
Oh, sorry.
St. Louis's first realization that, you know what? Maybe we need to try something different. So, they know that there's other cities that are growing. And other cities have advantages. San Francisco's got this gold rush thing going on. New York has, you know, all the immigrants going through that port, right? It's the easiest access to Europe. The highest population centers are leaving and heading towards towards New York first, nowhere else. And Chicago suddenly has railroad. What are we going to do, St. Louis? What are we going to do? So civic leaders came up with an idea. We, as the largest economy in the state of Missouri, want to rule our own destiny. So, they divorced. You're probably wondering, divorced from what? Well, they divorced from themselves. See, St. Louis was a city within a county that they called St. Louis County. Now, these sound like familiar things if you're familiar with St. Louis today. You're like, I know St. Louis County, I know St. Louis City. But in the 1800s, the city was just an entity within the county, right? Makes sense. Kind of like a suburb is in St. Louis County right now. Anyway, so, their purpose was, the civic leaders at the time, they thought, look, if we do this divorce, it's going to hyper-focus all development into the city boundaries. It's going to help us grow denser. It's going to help us grow more businesses. It's going to be better for us. We're going to become a bigger, better city because we're going to divide ourselves. We're going to say, this is our border, Skinker Road, pretty much. So the west border of Forest Park. That's as far as the city went. They said, this is perfect. That's our border. The end. Everything will just concentrate and highly grow in here. We don't really care if the rich people want to buy fancy houses just outside of city limits, live in the farmlands of whatever you want to call St. Louis County. We're fine with that. So the Great Divorce occurred. 1876, St. Louis leaders draft what will become a state-voted legislation to create language that defines in the state constitution, keep in mind, the state constitution, the Missouri entire state constitution. They voted to create language that literally makes St. Louis its own thing. So currently, if you pull up the current state constitution for the state of Missouri, no other city has any definition in there, right? It just says, like, here's how you make a city, here's how you make a county, blah, blah, blah. St. Louis County and St. Louis City are defined in our state constitution. And the reason is because of that divorce. They wanted a divorce, and they wanted to have own control. They didn't want the county mucking with their taxes. They didn't want that. They were the economic center. They had no one to compete with in the state. Why not control it themselves? They had the money to. So that was 1876. Reflecting on it, it made a lot of sense to do that, but obviously times have changed. So, fast forward to the present. There's a big conversation going on right now about unifying St. Louis City currently and St. Louis County currently into one metro St. Louis. So, that's an issue that's going to affect every single Missourian. And the reason is because the only way to get things removed or changed in the state constitution is by every state resident voting on it.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So things have very much changed since 1876, wouldn't you say? We've got a big city called Kansas City, we've got Jefferson City, Columbia, Springfield, the third largest city in the state, and many other, you know, pockets of places here and there. We also have suburban places. So in St. Louis County, there are currently 88 municipalities.
I thought it was 94, but
I believe it's 88 now.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with that.
Some have become disincorporated.
They have. And, yeah, so there's 88 municipalities, 88 other cities just west of St. Louis, right? That's the big movement going on right now is, okay, there's, you know, since 1876, St. Louis City has been operating as its own entity, having the same government, having the same offices that a county would have. They do their own tax assessments, they do their own district courts and stuff like that, and as well as operating as a city. So they've kind of been doing two things at once. And it worked well when the city had the majority of the population of the region. I want to point out that at one time, St. Louis City had 800,000 people, and it was projected to get to 1 million within a decade. Well, I think that was 1960, I think. 1960. I think that census, we were at 800,000, just shy of 1 million, and we were projected to hit 1 million in just the city population. But what happened was the suburbs got more developed, we built all the highways, and everyone moved out of the city. Mm-hmm. So all those population people, they moved to the county, the suburbs, municipalities like Chesterfield, Creepcourt, St. Anne, Maryland Heights, all of those wonderful 88 places that exist out there. And we've just kind of spread ourselves a little thinner than we were, and we've kind of stagnated, you could say, over the last 3 decades. We're a metro region with 3 million people population, the county has about 1 million, St. Louis City has about 300,000.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. Going from 800,000 to 300,000. Quite a difference. So, anyway, I say all this just because there's going to be a ballot initiative that's going to be... Currently, it's in the stage where... So, you're going to see this summer, you're going to see people all around in St. Louis, Kansas City, in small places here and there, in Springfield, in the square. You're going to see people with clipboards and petitions. They're going to say, hey, would you like to sign your name and put your address for this petition that's going to support the unification of St. Louis City and St. Louis County. So, if you choose to sign on that, all you're saying is that you would like to see that show up on the ballot. The initiative behind this movement, they need 165,000 signatures from across the state. So it's kind of a big deal. Like, I know we're talking about population numbers, we're like, oh, 165 doesn't sound like a lot, but when you think, like, no, you need 165,000 people to literally write their name and put their address down. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a weird thing we don't usually ask people to do.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird requirement, but, yeah.
Wait, so why do they want to do this? Like, what's the motive behind, like, I don't understand.
That's a really good question. So, the motive is that St. Louis has been stagnant, and what was a population center in just the city has kind of fled to and spread ourselves out into the county, and that seemed like it worked at first, but some of the issues that have come from that is there are 34, I believe, police departments in St. Louis County alone.
Oh.
And only 13 of them are accredited departments.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. There's 50-something. I think there's 54 police departments in St. Louis County. Only 13 are accredited. That means the other 39 are unaccredited police departments. And those are police departments that are operating in cities that are less than a square mile in size, that have a population of like 300 people.
Uh-huh.
These tiny little places that are really more like a subdivision than a city. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, you know, that's what made sense. In the 1950s, you moved into a place and then your neighbor said, why don't we rally together and get ourselves a incorporated city? You know, we can start, you know, assessing small taxes. We'll get our own police department. Doesn't that sound great? Made a lot of sense back then. There are probably racial issues tinged in that as well, but things have changed. And we don't really... I think it begs a good question that if you reflect on some of the issues that were brought out during the Ferguson protests, you know, issues about people not being policed equally, and cities not providing equal services to people. One of the best examples I feel like I like to share about what I learned from Ferguson is, you know, the city of Ferguson, the same year, I believe it was the same year, just recent, in the same amount of time, or close to it, the same year that Michael Brown was shot and killed in Ferguson, also the city opened up a massive like health facility complex that they paid for with city taxes. But they built that health complex in the predominantly white, wealthy part of Ferguson. Mm-hmm. While the area that Michael Brown got shot, they had streetlights that had been shot out for years and had never been replaced. So the same city that's choosing to build a massive health facility for one part of the population is also choosing not to really, you know, provide lights on streets. Uh-huh. And kind of, there's differences in services. And those kind of things are really perpetuated and allowed to occur when you have small municipalities. There's less oversight. The people that get elected tend to only represent their special interests. And I also like to point out that the city of Valley Park, it's a municipality that's at 141 and Interstate 44. We've all driven through it. It's the place that flooded. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone saw it on the news a few years back when everyone was like, whoa, St. Louis is flooded. And it was just like a small section, but whatever. Big deal, you know. And
Atlantis.
Yeah. Honestly, Valley Park could very well just sink away in a few years. Valley Park, if you go to like the Post-Dispatch website, stltoday.com, and you just type in Valley Park, look at the amount of issues that little city has dealt with. They've had mayors that have been indicted. They've had council people that have used the city credit card on fancy steak dinners on a weekly basis. I mean, oversight of small municipalities, it just doesn't seem to exist until the voter gets to vote. And I think once a year or once every 2 years, reflecting on how well people are governing your local governments, that's just not a good way to operate. And when you perpetuate that to the extent of what's going on in St. Louis County with 88 of those operating, taxing, policing in very different ways, not fairly providing, not equitably providing for the residents, then you start seeing that a region is now lagging behind. If it's just one place, it's okay. But when it's one place and the place next to it and the other tiny place next to that, it becomes a bigger issue. So civic leaders feel really passionate. Some civic leaders feel really passionate that unifying St. Louis City and St. Louis County into one larger government would really resolve some of the fiscal and equity issues that St. Louis as a region is experiencing. And hopefully, it would also, down the road, improve that region's economy, and obviously that would have ripple effects on the rest of the state. So I started this off by saying, I'm going to tell you a story that's going to affect every single Missourian, and it really will, because if this campaign can get 165 Missourians to sign off on their ballot, or on their initiative, their petition initiative, then this effort will be put on the statewide ballot. The language on the statewide ballot, I still don't know if I exactly agree with it. I don't really know my full opinions on it yet. I'm still really trying to examine it, so I'd hate to, you know, provide an opinion on that, but what I can say is I think that every Missourian should take a moment and kind of research the issue a little bit, understand what they think is important and not important about local government and county governments, and just keep in mind that come November 2020, we're all likely going to be voting on whether or not to merge St. Louis City and St. Louis County. And I would hate for it to be an issue that people vote on because they're not educated about why it matters. Because it literally, it doesn't just affect people that live in St. Louis City. It actually affects everyone that lives in St. Louis City and County. That's a combined population of 1.3 million people. And that's the strongest economy we have in the state. It's the 20th largest economy, just St. Louis City and County combined. That's the 20th largest economy in the United States.
Wow.
So if we restructure the government there, it seems like there'd be better results, potentially. So anyway, we have an opportunity to educate ourselves, to learn more about this. So that's my big thing. I want people to just know that this is something we're all likely going to be voting on.
Wow. Simon's big thing.
Wait, what did you say? Oh. Wow, that was so interesting. I've never heard any of that before in my whole entire life.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not lying.
I guess I have specific people I talk to about St. Louis.
Yeah. So.
But not to turn this into Donnybrook. But no, I think a merger would be really beneficial for the region. I think it's needed to display the strength of the St. Louis region, for sure, as well as consolidate redundant offices and wasted tax dollars and things like that. What's holding me back, though, is that it's the whole state voting to merge the city and the county. Because as it's written right now, if this goes on the ballot and it's passed, not only will it remove that language defining St. Louis City and St. Louis County as individual entities, but it'll add language that merges the two. And I think that should be a decision that's voted on locally, just St. Louis County and St. Louis City. It would be nice, and I think, like, the sign the petitions, you can't recraft the language once, like, you get all the signatures because you're signed to agree to that ballot measure. But it would be nice if, like, what is voted on would be remove this language and then put in a clause that says something about the, as the entities of St. Louis City and St. Louis County as they exist on this date, if they locally agree to merge slash consolidate slash whatever, then they will be recognized as such. I don't think it's fair that someone in St. Joseph gets to determine the future of a resident in Maryland Heights, how their tax structure is going to be completely rearranged, or their policing or things like that. The Better Together in general, that's what the movement is called. I think the end goal is really great, and I'm excited that the region is moving in this direction. I'm hoping that this garners, like, a lot of media attention, and it gets really close to going on the ballot but not, or getting on the ballot and not passing, and then in the future, a few years down the road, people can decide, let's try this again but do it differently. 'Cause there are other metropolitan areas in the United States that have done this, and it did take multiple attempts. So I know Indianapolis and Nashville both did mergers. In Nashville, they did it, it took at least 2 times. And both times, it was a local attempt. And the second time around, like, they had enough, like, local meetings and discussions that they didn't need the whole state of Tennessee to vote for this thing to pass. People in the area were happy about it and wanted to see that change. It didn't take a bunch of people from the corners of the state to make the change happen. So that's my hope. But, yeah.
It's not really a question. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I have to omit that whole section.
Just kidding.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah, go for it. Okay. Yeah, of course. So, I was just kidding.
And I definitely, that's also been the biggest hindrance for me too, is there's it's almost like there should be 2 votes. The first vote just to get the language out of the state constitution, mm-hmm. because sure, it made sense in 1876. It doesn't make sense anymore. No one else is written in the state constitution, so St. Louis City and County shouldn't have language in there. The lawyers, now granted it's the lawyers for the Better Together group that's doing all of this, they claim that they've looked at it, and they can't find any way that you could do it separately. They say you have to have a simultaneous vote, because it'll be, since you're removing the language of how St. Louis County and St. Louis City exists, that it has to be simultaneously either replaced or somehow immediately enacted. And the issue, it'd be a constitutional issue, I guess. I'm not a lawyer, but that, let's say, you know, the whole state votes to, the majority of the state votes to get rid of that language, but then the local St. Louis City and County, they don't vote to enact new language. Suddenly, there is nothing existing for St. Louis City and County. They just don't exist on paper, in theory. that's kind of weird because people don't get paid when they don't exist on paper, right? So that seems to be the big issue. It's this weird constitutional law issue. Hopefully, I would love to see another group come forward with another idea, but I will point out that Better Together's been doing this for 8 years. They've been researching it, and they've been doing like these like open houses and trying to educate people in the St. Louis area, at least, about why they feel like this is a really important thing. They're putting $25 million behind just getting those 165,000 signatures. That's apparently how much it's going to cost. Because you have to like pay the clipboard holders to go out there, spend their time in Springfield Square and all over the state to kind of be like, hey, would you sign this petition? Hey, would you sign this petition? Hey, did you sign this petition? And apparently that costs $25 million to do. The other thing,
that job.
I know, right? the other thing I'll point out is there's less, I think we're 20 months from November 2020.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's right around the corner. And that's the other thing is there's really a timeline aspect too. So... you know, I've had like crazy dreams where I've been like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to come up with a better option and somehow come up with a bunch of money or convince people to just like support this and just make a grassroots effort of it. But then I have like this job thing going on, you know, that takes up my Monday through Fridays. And then like, you know, I want my weekends. So I guess I'm not going to be the one to do it on my own. So if anyone's listening would love to help, please let me know.
You should start it and then call it. We're Better Together.
Ooh.
And it could be you and someone else from St. Louis. It could be Andrew.
Yeah.
And going against the state of Missouri.
Let's do it.
Ooh. I support you. If you listen to this podcast, you support them too.
It's the beginning right here.
Right. Yeah. This is it, the foundation. Starts with a podcast. Everything good starts with a podcast.
That's so true.
I think everyone would love for it to be a local initiative. That's what I hear. That's what my parents that's the speed bump they keep hitting. They're just like, why does it have to go to the state? What I will add, I'll just say this, politically, I'll point out that this Better Together group, they've hired like some pretty expensive political consultants, they've had them on board for all these years, and they seem to think pretty confidently that they can come up with a campaign, that I guess it's going to be like a television and radio campaign, maybe billboards too, but they're hoping that they can convince rural Missourians that tend to be conservative and Republican that that this is an issue of cost savings. And that this is an opportunity to get rid of big government. So I think that's what I've heard, is that they're going to run with that kind of statewide campaign through the state, across the state. And then locally in the big urban centers, they're going to try and run with more of a, hey, like, you know, this is about equity, social equity, about making sure minority populations and marginalized people are better represented, are fairer represented, aren't over-policed, aren't experiencing... what's it called, like profiting by police? That's like a big thing that's been going on, is all these small municipalities, they don't really, how do they bring an income? Well, they make, you know, they've got a little bit of sales tax here and there, but not much, you know. You got like two strip malls in your little city, you're not going to make a lot of money. So they have their own police departments that just ticket for ridiculous things. It could be because you have, you know, your side mirror might be busted or something like that. Most places don't ticket for that, but these small places, they've got nothing better to do. So you're kind of ticketing for profit, and really you're ticketing for the poor, and you're ticketing minorities. So that's like a big, that's a, whatever. Anyway, so it'd be really, they seem convinced from a political standpoint that they can actually win this way by taking it to the statewide vote. Mm-hmm. I'm a little skeptical. We've seen votes that we all thought were going to go one certain way statewide and didn't. So I'm pretty skeptical on what's going to happen in the next 20 or 19 months, however many months we have until November 2020. But, yeah.
Man.
It's a big issue.
Yeah.
And then what's the deadline for the signatures?
I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, Andrew, I wanted to comment on this too. You pointed out, the Better Together initiative that they came up with, it's removing language from the Constitution, and it's replacing it with different language.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely correct. And the language that they're replacing with is, it defines this new Metro St. Louis government. Can I take a quick minute to just explain what that's going to be like? It's going to be one police.
Okay.
It's going to be one massive police department to cover the entire St. Louis city and county region. It would not allow any municipality to have their own police department. So that should resolve sort of that policing issue and that equity issue. Now, you still have to have good, you know, a good police and good sub-districts and sub-precincts and all that stuff. And you'll still have, you know, I keep telling my dad, I was like, don't worry, you'll still have, you know, officers that are headquartered in Creve Coeur, because that's where he lives. You'll still have officers there. You don't have to worry about officers driving half an hour to get to you. There'll be precincts all over the region. And the other thing is that we would have only one municipal court instead of having a ton of municipal courts. Right now, St. Louis City has their own, Chesterfield, Creve Coeur, Maryland Heights. I think St. Anne even has their own.
That reminds me, when I worked for St. Anne, they actually had to take on the role of the municipal courts in surrounding tiny cities or municipalities in the St. Louis area, because it was a new law was passed, maybe, yes, or saying that if your population is a certain size or whatever, you can't have your own municipal court. You have to be facilitated by another municipality. So St. Anne took on maybe three, or I don't know, it was more than one other.
That law was passed after Ferguson. Mm-hmm. So the Ferguson Commission and the Ferguson Report, they when they evaluated what's going on in St. Louis, like why do we have people that are being treated differently? And they looked at the municipal courts and they realized, oh my goodness, some of these municipalities, 90% of their money is making their municipal court. It's crazy, right? Like, that's not what a city should exist. A city shouldn't exist by municipal court fines and ridiculous parking tickets, you know, that's for having leaves in your yard. That's not local government. What service are they providing? They're not. They're ticketing. They're making money. Yeah, it's
to stay afloat.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there was a percentage clause that came out with that law, and so municipalities that were bringing in too much money, too much revenue from their municipal court that like surpassed a certain percentage, mm-hmm. they just had to completely eliminate their court or give it to another wow. neighboring municipality. Yeah, yeah. So this is one of many initiatives that you could say in the last decade that have been made to address too much small government in St. Louis. So as I was quickly describing, just this large metro St. Louis government would have one police department, one municipal court, and it would not allow any of those current municipalities that exist. They wouldn't be able to have their own police department. They wouldn't be able to have their own municipal court. It would also, this new government would manage most of the taxing. But if there's small taxes that like your municipality that you live in now, maybe they came up with some tax to fund something, that tax will exist until that thing has been funded, and then that tax will end. So presumably 20 years from now, only this large government would handle all the taxing. There would probably be still some sub-taxes that have to exist for some odd years. That's pretty much the basics of it. There's some weird stuff in the language about who takes over. The first mayor would be the current county executive. He's not a very popular individual. And their idea was that this would be a beneficial way to transition into a new government. If the new government is, you know, if everyone votes on it, that, you know, why, you know, if you're going to have a new government, why would you want to immediately have completely new elections? So the group behind all this decided, well, you know, maybe we could just make the guy that is county executive right now, which is an elected position, make him the first immediate mayor for this new thing. And then there'd be elections in a few years after that. So it's pretty convoluted. It gets pretty deep. It's pretty boring, but it is really important. It's really going to affect the state economy one way or another. If we don't do anything, it's going to continue affecting the state economy the same way that it has been. If we do something, it's going to affect the state economy in some way. We're still not sure. And right now, it looks like everyone's going to vote on it unless I can get a staff of 100 people and millions of dollars to help me come up with a better solution. So.
Wow. I'm speechless. I feel like you've told us everything. I don't even want to ask my question. Okay. Simon. I almost forgot your name. If you could tell us one thing about this that, I don't know, what's like your driving home point?
Just try and be informed. Just try and be informed these next 19 or however many months. It's looking like, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of things that get $25 million behind them that don't end up happening. So it's looking like you're going to see it on the ballot if you go vote. Please go vote. And please educate yourself.
Bam.
Pow.
No. I'm just kidding. All right, Simon. Well, thanks for being on our show. That was so informative. That was, yeah.
Official news bulletin.
I know. I just need to ask Simon for my news.
NPR is in your future.
Start your own news podcast.
Oh, yeah? Do you want 49 minutes and 52 seconds of talking?
Well, we talked for like 15 minutes, so back off, bro. Just kidding. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next segment, which is learning a country in 3 minutes. Oh, unplug this.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure thing.
Thank you. Let me start the timer.
All right.
Okay, and then we're making them guess, right?
Yes.
Okay, it's a fun little game. All right, ready, set, go.
Home to the world's largest sausage. 39 miles.
Ew. I don't like that. Winemaking in this country can be traced back to 6,000 years.
Oh. it was one of the cities in this town was used to film Borat's hometown.
Oh, I heard of that. There's 3,700 types of plants. 39 are in danger, 39 types. And then 1,253 types of plants are rare species.
It suggests if you're invited to someone's house, you bring flowers. But if you bring flowers, it should be an odd number because even numbers are for funerals.
Oh, I think I knew that. Yeah. Or a lot of countries do that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's not too wrong. Anyway, this is one of the poorest countries in the EU.
Oh, no. They have a great 4G network ranking 4 out of 78 countries.
This country became independent from Turkey in 1877.
And they have an Arc de Triomphe replica.
The scientist who discovered insulin is from here.
And my last one is home to the heaviest building in the world.
Also Transylvania. Dracula.
Home to Dracula.
That's where that boy's from.
You want to say the country?
Oh yeah, it's Romania. Also, we didn't make it 3 minutes, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry.
All right, next segment. Pop culture.
I will start, I guess. So, I watched a movie called Sliding Doors on Netflix.
Me too.
I'm not falling for that this week. It was released in 1998. I almost said it was published in 1998. But it stars Gwyneth Paltrow, and the official category would fall into is rom-com, but I thought it was really interesting because the premise is this woman gets fired from her job, and so in the middle of the day, she's going to the tube because it's England, not the subway, but she's trying to catch the tube to go home, and all of a sudden it like splits screens. And they show, you, like, one of them is her, like, catching it just barely, and the other is her missing it.
Oh, gosh.
And so,
so suspenseful.
So crazy. So, the rest of that movie, then, is, it's not, like, split screen the whole time. Actually, in that moment, it's not even split screen. They do, like, a rewind, like, a and they, like, flash back to her, like, running down the steps, and then there's, like, a girl playing with a doll on the railing, so it, like, makes her, like, slow down, and in the other scenario, like, the mother pulls the little girl away, and so Gwyneth Paltrow, like, keeps on running down the steps uninterrupted. But anyways, so then, like, the whole movie is, like, seeing a scene of this lady, like, doing something in this one reality, and then cutting over to what she's doing in that exact moment in the other reality. What makes this even more interesting is, like, her significant other that she's living with is having an affair. And when she catches the train, she walks in on him with the other woman.
Oh, no.
So in this one reality, she is, like, picking up the pieces of, like, losing her job and, like, finding out that she's been cheated on. And in the other, she's just, like, in this, like, really crappy relationship with the guy that's cheating on her and not knowing it. But it was just really interesting, like, these alternate timelines, like, because... Mm-hmm. you know, like, it's the same person, so you have the same tendencies, and, like, patterns, and, like, oh, I'm going to so-and-so's house on this day, like, 2 weeks from now, or whatever, like, those things are the same, but then there's, like, little things that because you were at this spot in this moment, like, thinking this thing, it shifts a bunch of other things, and also, an interesting note, like, the way that you kept track of which reality it was in, and the one where she caught her boyfriend cheating on her, she, like, goes and stays with her best friend. Her best friend is like, you need a haircut. You need to do something new. So that's, like, how you can easily identify which reality it is, because she, like, has a short haircut, and she, like, dyes it. And so you're like, oh, this is, like, the happy one where she's, like, finding herself. And, like, oh, this is, like, the bummer one where she, like, has a crummy new job and her loser boyfriend, like, doesn't have the guts to choose, like, either the mistress or the lady he's living with. That character was annoying. Anyway, so you could definitely tell it was a British movie, though, like, aside from the accents.
That's what I was gonna say!
Because they kept on quoting Monty Python, like, and they were like,
oh, lame.
And they were like, thought it was hilarious. Like, which Monty Python is great, but like,
debatable.
But like, in American movies, you don't usually like see the protagonist being like, oh, and like, I don't know Monty Python well enough to quote it. I'm disappointing my high school friends right now. But, yeah, so it's like, oh yeah, true coconuts, something, I don't know.
Knights of the Round Table.
Farm animals being tossed over a castle wall. A crazy bunny murdering people.
Isn't that movie Secret Life's a Pet? There was a crazy bunny there.
but they used several words that I think were bad words because of the context that they were using them, but I was not familiar with them.
Do not repeat them.
I will not repeat them. I did write them down if you want to see them later.
Bad. I'm telling.
Also, another interesting note, on IMDb, one of the fun facts was, several critics believed it to be a ripoff of the Polish film called Blind Chance from 1987.
Too old.
That's like not old enough. That's
like, too old.
The golden era is like 1930 to 1978, you know, like that bracket.
I could throw up on that bracket. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
So, yeah, no, I liked it. I thought it was really interesting because I really liked it.
Wait, when was that movie made?
This was 1998, the Gwyneth Paltrow movie.
Yeah. The greatest era.
I mean, I won't argue that 90s movies are good, too. But I thought this movie was really interesting. I liked the whole notion of, like, timelines and stuff like that. And we are concerned about the time.
We only have a 60-minute
limit.
Oh, no,
there's a cutoff. Oh, no. Wait. All right, after I finish my talk, we're going to pause it and start a new segment. I got all figured out.
Hurry up! You have 2 minutes!
No. Like, we'll break the pop culture segment into two parts.
I know, hurry up though! You need to finish your part! You have 2 minutes to finish!
Okay. I like the notion of timelines. I think it's very interesting. And it was cool to see how her character developed throughout the movie. Both of her characters developed throughout the movie. And there's a twist in the middle. And I don't want to say anymore. I recommend
watching.
How
would you rate it? A to B. Letter scale.
You keep doing that.
Letter scale.
This is so tense. I feel like a bomb's about to go. The numbers are red.
Hurry up, Andrew.
I got a minute and 20 seconds.
Tell us your reading.
Did I say letters or numbers?
Letters. The letter scale.
The numbers are red.
The letter scale.
Oh, the letter scale. On my IMDb tracker, I gave it 7 out of 10 stars.
So that's like a C.
But my grading letter scale is a little different. I got 59 seconds, people. That's
hurry
fine.
Up. Oh my gosh. Even when it matters, you're still going slow.
B+.
Wow, B. That's pretty high.
I was not happy.
That's like higher than you started with Scooby-Doo last week.
Well, because that was one of the lower-end Scooby-Doo TV series.
You're right.
Yeah. But yeah, I recommend it. And if you watch it, tell me about it, because I want to
debate something. Is
it on Netflix? It is on
Netflix. Oh, then maybe.
Yeah. All right, and now we're going to transition to Manuela, and we're going to switch this segment over.
So for pop culture this week, I did the movie 47 Meters Down. Oh my foot. So I'm going to read the IMDb little bio or whatever.
Synopsis.
It says, two sisters vacationing in Mexico are trapped in a shark cage at the bottom of the ocean. With less than an hour of oxygen left and great white sharks circling nearby, they must fight to survive.
Is this Mandy Moore?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. Yeah, nice. Mandy Moore. And then, so Mandy Moore's character's name is Lisa. And then her sister, Kate, is played by the girl that person looks really familiar. is played by the girl that is in Freaky Friday. That's like that mean girl. And she's like, oh my gosh, like I love you. And then she's just really mean. Anyway. But I really liked the movie. It was very suspenseful because I was like, well, first it was kind of funny because it was like typical like girl kind of drama and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want Lisa to like get eaten by a shark. And like, Kate's a terrible sister, but like, whatever, it's just a movie. And they are going to go shark diving in Mexico, but they're not going like the legal way. Which is what makes it so crazy, because they just go with, like, this friend that they met. And the guys are, like, chumming the water, and they're like, isn't that illegal? And the guy's like, well, yeah, but... So it's just, like, there's a lot of things that, like, lead up to this that you're, like, you would expect their, like, shark cage to, like, break. Because that's what happens. It, like, falls to the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like really crazy, and I feel like I learned a lot about scuba diving, because they have their like oxygen tanks on and stuff, and it's crazy because they're down there for so long that the guy on the radio is like, okay, I'm gonna send down like extra tanks, but the reason that I've waited so long to do this is because if you like change tanks, then like you're more likely to get like nitrogen to your brain and stuff like that, and so it could be, like, it's really dangerous. And it can, like, lead to hallucinations and, like, all kinds of stuff. And so he does that, and it's just, like, it was kind of dumb because, like, Lisa was just dumb. And it's like, oh, she is, like, at the edge of a cliff in the, like, bottom of the ocean. And she decides to, like, keep swimming. And then she's like, I don't know how to get back. Like, obviously that's gonna happen. You can't see. But it was super freaky seeing all the shark attacks, or, like, the sharks, like, circling them and stuff like that. So I would rate it, like, a C.
Okay.
Maybe C+. Because it was really good, but it was, like, kind of cheesy. But then the end is worthy of a B. So I would give it a B.
Okay.
Because the end was really good, and... everyone should watch it. And they're making a sequel. Mm. Not so much of the same girls, but of different friends who get in a fishy situation with sharks.
Is that the official tagline?
No, but it should be. I'll coin it.
Nice.
Alright, yep, so that's mine.
Cool. Two bees.
Two bees. We are single dogs.
We're just two single dogs. Alright.
Fun facts with Andrew.
Grizzly bears have a bite force of over 8 million pascals, enough to crush a bowling ball.
What's a pascal?
It's a unit of force.
All right.
Yeah.
Good, good.
Nice.
I do have an announcement before we close off real quick. I heard a rumor. Well, it's not a rumor. I got an email from... Wonders of Wildlife here in Springfield, but they have a half-priced single-day bundle tickets.
Oh.
For people who live in, like, select counties of Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. So, go look it up. And if you live in the right county, you can go to Wonders of Wildlife in Springfield, Missouri for half price. Nice. It's worth it.
So is this a temporary thing, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's through March.
Okay.
Yep.
Man, oh man.
That's all I got.
Nice. And then my announcement is you can follow Simon on Twitter at STLMayor.
Because he will be our mayor.
We know his ambitions.
We endorse him. Our official endorsement.
You heard it here first. Two Friends with Nothing in Common is produced by Manuel Lenz and Andrew Meinke. Special thanks to this week's guest, Simon Nogan. Two Friends with Nothing in Common is recorded in the Ozarks.